First, it was Western Europe. Now, it is parts of Asia. That's the sound of civilians rescuing a woman from rushing floodwaters in Zhengzhou. China's Henan province saw a year's worth of rain in just 3 days last week. At least 99 people have died. Hundreds of thousands more have been displaced. Zhengzhou, the province's capital, was hit especially hard by sinkholes, a highway tunnel that filled with water, trapping motorists, and flooded subway cars with stranded passengers knee-deep in water. Keith Bradshaw is the Shanghai bureau chief for the New York Times. He has been reporting on the floods, and he joins us from Zhengzhou. Keith, good to have you with us.
Thank you very much.
You arrived there in Zhengzhou, a city of 11 million people, shortly after the record-breaking rainfall. Can you describe some of what you've seen?
There has been a lot of destruction, particularly actually in the smaller villages around the city, where you've had a series of landslides and flash floods as rivers have overflowed their banks in many small and medium-sized communities. Here in Zhengzhou itself, there were many streets flooded right at the start. The city has drained fairly well over the last several days. The real tragedies occurred because of the speed with which the water fell. In particular, in a single hour, the rainfall shattered all the records around here within 8 inches in 1 hour. And in a city that is nearly flat, that meant that the streets filled, the water covered the curbs, it covered the sidewalks, and it crept in under the doors of shopkeepers' houses. The saddest part, though, were the two incidents that you mentioned. One was the highway tunnel that filled nearly to the ceiling with water and had 250 cars in it. Most of the people were fortunately able to get out. The other very sad incident involved the subway train that you mentioned, and there 14 people sadly drowned.
What have you heard from people? What kinds of stories did they tell you about how quickly it happened and how they reacted?
Because this rainfall was so far out of line with anything anybody had seen before, a lot of people didn't expect the level of flooding. And what really made the difference in some cases between life and death was how quickly people reacted, how quickly they realized this was not your average downpour. Now, there were stories of heroism along the way, and there was, by coincidence, in that subway tunnel was a former People's Liberation Army commando who had, in training, been used to swimming up to 6 miles a day, which is an extraordinary distance, and he reacted by going up and down the rows of cars, banging on people's windows for them to leave their cars, abandon their cars. And then as the water became so deep that cars were filling with water and sinking, he swam back and forth among the motorists and pulled them to safety at the side of the tunnel, and onlookers helped them get out of the water.
You mentioned that the rains came fast, the floods came quickly. Was there any kind of alert system to let people know to evacuate?
There were alerts in the form of short messages on people's cell phones telling them to move cars, for example, to high ground to park them so that the engines would not be flooded. But the city did not try to close businesses or close the subway. And we have seen a flurry of announcements from Beijing in the past week saying from now on, cities must be quicker to close tunnels in particular in the event that there's going to be one of these extreme rainfalls again. In addition, you have promises from the central government to improve meteorology. In this case, you only had an hour's warning. And there's also talk of closing businesses and government offices when there's going to be extreme rain. They've also issued orders that much more junior people need to be allowed to stop the trains. Reportedly, the people at the subway station before the train filled with water were aware that water was pouring in, but did not have the authority to stop the subway trains. That had to come from the highest levels of the municipal government and the subway system, and they didn't have that authority.
Keith, in terms of flood mitigation, I understand that there are some parks that have been built to absorb excess volumes of water. How effective were those?
they were effective at doing what they are supposed to do, which is absorbing water over the course of a day or two so that it doesn't stay in the streets. So even though this is a nearly flat city, you didn't have the water just sitting in the streets for a week stagnant. It did drain into these very large parks that have recently been built, and from there into the rivers. The problem is the speed with which this water fell. I mean, 8 inches an hour is practically like a waterfall, and the water just simply couldn't reach these new so-called sponge parks quickly enough. If you think of a sponge in your kitchen, it's great if you slowly move it around a countertop where it has water and absorbs the water. But if you overturn a bucket of water onto a sponge, most of it's going to splash off the sponge and go everywhere. And that's what happened with these parks that are supposed to be working like sponges. They did absorb a lot of water, but they couldn't do it in a single hour.
You mentioned the water levels have gone down now. When you walk around the streets, what does it look like? What does it smell like?
Surprisingly, there is already a very big effort to clean things up. Now, I was walking up and down a street several hours ago, and there were dozens of cars that still had a lot of mud on them, and there were people trying to clear out the engines. So many cars were damaged. In a nearly flat city, there was almost nowhere for people to move their cars to higher ground. But by and large, there has been a very fast, extensive effort to clean up the mud, to sweep the streets, and so forth.
Keith, likely people are at this point focusing on the cleanup, on the aftermath of this. But in a wider context, how much is climate change discussed in China?
Climate change is being discussed more. And as it happened, you had China's top climate negotiator promising last Saturday China would soon be providing more specifics on its plans to become carbon neutral over the next four decades. Now there is a broad awareness, even before this week's tragic events, that China, like other countries, does face a real challenge from climate change and does need to work, like other countries, on addressing emissions so as not to face some of these very sad consequences from a warming world.
Keith, I so appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
That was Keith Bradshaw, the Shanghai Bureau Chief for the New York Times. According to my next guest, the recent flooding in China underscores the need for cities to do a better job building flood management systems. Faith Chan is an Associate Professor of Environmental Sciences at the University of Nottingham's campus in Ningbo, China. Hello.
Hi, hello.
What did you make, first of all, of those scenes in Henan province and the year's worth of rain in just 3 days?
I think that is a very rare meteorological situation. And then because of the two typhoons, that one is just landed in Zhejiang province and another one last week is hanging around in Hainan Island. So it forms a very low pressure wind belt that stopped in Zhengzhou or those off in China, which is really rare because it's the semi-arid area. Normally the rainfall for 1 year is just 500 to 600 millimeters. But it pulled down in 4 hours in that event. It's a very rare situation.
Although you do hear climate scientists saying that it's going to become more frequent, these extreme weather events. If that is the case, how do you think China ought to be preparing?
Yeah, I agree. But I think it's getting more intensive rainfall in northern China. I agree with that. And I think it's very difficult to just change all the system in one day, right, or in a very short period. I think for my experience, for my real point is actually Chinese government can do more on the communication, emergency services and responses. So I think especially for education, warning system and perception on the community that needs media and also work with social media, also mobile technology, big data, those things that Chinese government can do that to raise awareness and preparation for people. Yeah.
Do you think that it is the communication infrastructure? Is that more important than addressing climate change?
I think we need to use mixed option. We need to use soft measures that what we just discussed, but we also need to be prepared to live with extreme climate. I think at the moment, Chinese government, they like what Keith said, they use smart cities, they use different measures, which is a very encouraging and also positive direction. But I think sometimes for cities, they actually develop really fast, and also sometimes the land drainage system cannot cope with the development rates. That's why I think the Chinese government really aware of this kind of situation. They want to improve the drainage system. That's why they inject the smart city, want to use a more sustainable direction to improve the drainage system. But we cannot just change the infrastructure in a very short period. So that's why I think I agree with you, more rainfall will come, especially in some part that normally will not face that much intensive rainfall. I think at the moment, Chinese government can do is try to improve the warning system and also addressing these kind of climate resilience things, other than we talk about carbon neutralization, carbon emission, but we also need to deal with the climate resilience in the COP26 upfront in November.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yet China's coal agency is expected to boost production over the next 4 years. I mean, we often hear that China is one of the world's biggest polluters, that it's not doing enough to fight climate change. Do you think this is going to be a wake-up call?
From my observation, Chinese government has initiated for a lot of carbon emission and also carbon reduction actions. For example, a lot of big cities, they changed the public buses to electric buses, and then the changing rate of electric buses even faster than many big cities like Hong Kong and Singapore, like in the neighborhood. So I think the wake-up call has been initiated. But I think for Jingzhou event is another wake-up call for the climate extremes by urban flood. And that's why it reflects to what I just said. We just happening on the typhoon, just land Ningbo and also Hangzhou area. But it has zero casualties. No people died. No people got serious injuries. I think that actually helps the Chinese government in the other areas to take more alert for these climate extremes actions. Yeah.
Okay, well, Faith, we've been talking about China, but if you could stand by while we bring in another example in another country, because India has also seen unprecedented and deadly flooding this summer. In parts of the western state of Maharashtra, the flooding has caused powerful landslides that have devastated villages and led to at least 200 deaths. Well, that was the sound of a video taken during a deadly landslide in the Sangla Valley. The video shows massive boulders rolling down the mountain, hitting cars, breaking a bridge in half. That landslide killed 9 people. On the line with us now, Roxy Matthew Cole, a climate scientist at the India Institute of Tropical Meteorology in Pune. Hello.
Hi, Robin. It's a pleasure to talk to you on the monsoon floods of Maharashtra.
Thank you very much for joining us. I mean, the sound of that landslide, trying to picture it and describe it, it sounds quite horrifying. Can you walk us through why the flooding in the state has been particularly bad this year as compared to past monsoon seasons?
Yeah, the rains that we had were, in fact, unprecedented. The monsoon floods are common in India, but not at this scale. We had heavy to extreme rains for almost 7 days over some regions of the state. In fact, one of the stations recorded rains of about 600 millimeter in just 1 day. So Keith was talking about 200 millimeter in 1 hour in China. So this is an exceptional event similar to that in Maharashtra. And this is a station where we have been measuring the rainfall for over a century. It's a hill station in Maharashtra called Mahabaleshwar. So the data is there to tell us that this was an exceptional rain, breaking all-time records.
Do you think that it's a one-off, or do you expect that you will see more of this type of extreme weather in years to come?
It's not that we will see in the future. Our research shows already there is a threefold rise in the number of extreme rainfall events across India, including Maharashtra. And this is based on more than 70 years of rainfall data, daily rainfall data that has been collected over India. And there is also a 50% increase in the number of cyclones also coming from the Arabian Sea over to India. Because if you look at the configuration of India, it's surrounded by the Indian Ocean on all three sides. We have cyclones and extreme rainfall events coming up in the recent period. And it's not just the frequency of these extreme weather events, but also their intensity, duration, and also the area they are covering. All these factors are increasing across India.
And in the short term, what is India doing to prepare for this kind of weather? I mean, we heard in China about these sponge cities to absorb the extra water. What's happening in India?
Yeah, I saw that Faith Chan was working on sponge cities, and we still don't have such kind of measures in India. And the first thing we are doing is we are depending on our forecast and disaster management. So forecast and disaster management have improved over time. For example, we had an extremely severe cyclone recently, and a lot of people have been evacuated. But we cannot keep on evacuating people based on forecasts every year, because these kind of extreme weather events are increasing. We might be saving lives occasionally, but not their livelihoods. So there's a huge amount of damage to infrastructure. And also in this case, in the recent floods, what happened was that this happened over the rural areas and villages. So generally, we are used to have monsoon floods in big cities like Mumbai or coastal cities. But this time it happened over a region, over the hill station, which led to flooding of a river and towns downstream and small villages downstream, flooding the entire area for several days. And these people were not prepared. So we need to disaster-proof, just like our cities, our villages, and also the farms and agriculture places, and also train local administration and public on how to respond to these extreme weather events. We cannot keep on evacuating people every time.
We were talking to Professor Chan about the urbanization, the role it has played in China, that it's happening very quickly. What about in India? How has land use impacted the severity of the flooding there?
Oh, the land use has severe impacts on how the floods are manifesting, how the extreme weather events are manifesting. And both, we can see that both over the cities and also the rural areas. So, for example, when a city like Mumbai is flooded, it could be due to extreme rain events. But the severity of these floods are manifold increased because of the way the city is planned. For example, the city do not have the floodplains anymore, the mangroves anymore, and the rivers anymore that used to absorb a part of this water, the flood water. And it's the same state with the rural villages also. The course of the river has been changed because of illegal construction along the riverside. So the floodplain is low. So when the river is bulging out, it is flooding the nearby cities. So the land use changes have a tremendous impact. And also in the rural areas like this time, we see that the land use changes also have an impact on the landslides. And this is an observation that we see with several of the recent floods that occurred across India, like Kerala floods in 2018 and the recent Maharashtra floods, because the land use changes make the hills vulnerable. And when we have more than enough rains that can be absorbed by the soil, it comes down as boulders and sand and mud with all the water downstream impacting the towns down. So this is happening again due to land use changes.
Let's just quickly return to Professor Chan in China. Professor Chan, Keith Bradshaw mentioned that more specifics are coming on plans for China to become carbon neutral. But what do you think will be the consequences if China does not act quickly, does not do more?
To be honest, we need to be fair because the population and development rate and also the stages of development in China is very different compared to the Western world. Right? But as far as I see, the Chinese government tried to commit with the COP26 agreement and also Kyoto Protocol in 2035. They also set the target and want to achieve that. So I would say development is positive, so we just need to wait and see what happens. But I can see more advertisement. The Chinese government encourage people to buy electric cars and then to save energies as well. So I think the development is positive, and also suggests more energies, say solar power or wind power, and those hydropower system is still very popular as well. So I think the development is positive, I can say.
Roxy, last word to you. Monsoon season isn't over yet. India, of course, is still recovering from the rapid spread of the Delta variant. How are people there coping?
Well, as for me, I'm living in a bubble, but we see that the cases are still yet to come down drastically. The Delta variant is also going around. It's a tricky situation that we face here. In fact, I had a bad situation with one of my colleagues passing away recently. So he was working on coordinating the Indian Ocean experiments, which are important for observing the monsoon. So he used to coordinate the international monitoring of Indian Ocean observations and also the community. And so he passed away recently due to COVID-related complications. So this kind of, we are seeing the impact on the scientific community as well. And also we saw that there are challenges for us in terms of the observing systems, because we ended up having fewer research cruises in the Indian Ocean to understand and observe the monsoon on a long time. In fact, several of the cruises were canceled and we couldn't install or service some of the observing systems in the Indian Ocean. So that have a severe impact on our monsoon forecast as well, and also on how we monitor the long-term changes in the Indian Ocean that affects the monsoon conditions.
Well, I'm very sorry for the loss of your colleague. Thank you both for talking to us about this today. Stay safe.
Sure. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Yeah.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Faith Chan is an associate professor of environmental sciences at the University of Nottingham's campus in Ningbo, China. And Roxy Matthew Cole is a climate scientist at the India Institute of Tropical Meteorology in Pune.